Hi, this is John Jarrell, science fiction and fantasy literary agent, and you're listening to Siren FM.
This is Shane Rimmer. You are listening to Parsec.
Got the delights of Alien Dawn, Alien Armageddon, and First Time Long Time to your credit, and you're looking after the Artists Unlimited Talent Agency, you might think, that is enough, clearly. No, a Renaissance woman obviously is beckoning, because we're delighted to be able to welcome for the first time on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition another superb LA connection, right in the height, of course, of pilot season. It's ace talent agent, superb actress, and general all-round wonderful producer. That'll be Cynthia Martin. Cynthia, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Now, I mean, as I said, multi-talented. Normally, you find it's folk towards the end of their career who start going into production and agencies and all sorts of other bits and pieces. But you managed to combine all three effectively. So, what's the secret, Cindy?
Well, you know, I'm reminded of Mary Pickford and Charlie Chaplin back in the day of silent movies. And they were the actors, and they decided to start their own company to produce their own films, and that was United Artists. And when Charlie Chaplin signed the papers, he said, "Now the inmates are running the asylum," and that's kind of the motto we go by. I know it's crazy where the inmates are running the asylum, and it just gives us a little bit more control over what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, the difference between yourself and Mary Pickford, apart from the fact that you're much more talented than Mary, I'm sure, if she's looking down, she'll say, yeah, Cindy Crawford is the girl that basically has taken the mantle on, is clearly we have much more multimedia. I mean, the very fact we're doing this interview live over the Atlantic Ocean and indeed the Pacific, depending on which way around the world you're going, of course, is just tantamount to the fact that with online material, with social networking, social media, it's an ongoing sequence in which really there are all sorts of other areas, and the way in which people are consuming movies, for instance, and TV series is changing.
Absolutely, and it's also changing as far as running the agency. So much of what I do to get auditions for the actors in the agency and for myself is all digital. And so I'm on my deck out in Malibu with my laptop at 5 in the morning, and that's my office. I'm submitting people digitally for the auditions. It's all digital now.
So that's why we love our California links, because you can say that out in Malibu, sorting things through on that basis, and it's just a matter of, in Lincoln, it's a fairly bright spring day at present, but, you know, who knows? But then again, Lincoln and Los Angeles, it's an interesting juxtaposition at the best of times. So great stuff there. Cindy, just talk to us in terms of what appealed initially to yourself in terms of entering the business of show in the first place.
Well, you know, that started back when I was in college, and I was actually torn between being a dance major or going to law school. So I was majoring in political science and taking a lot of dance classes, and I was living out on the beach in Santa Cruz, California. That's a little bit north of L.A. And I got my start actually as a swimsuit model with Ocean Sports magazine. And then from there, that led to music videos, to commercials, and then movies, but I also ended up going to law school. And about the time I was graduating from law school, a couple of actors I knew way back when, way before Artists Unlimited Agency, we decided to start a production company, Renegade Film Artists. And we were all actors, but I did the legal work. Another actor was a writer. Another actor was a cinematographer. And we started creating our own projects. And so that kind of led in that direction. And then from there, I got more into the acting, and that company kind of dissipated. And then, about 5 years ago, 5 years ago, I was up in the Santa Cruz area still, and I was coming back to L.A., and I thought, you know, I need to find a good L.A. agent. And then I thought, you know, with my lawyer background, my production background, I'll start an agency.
Infinitely
and
better.
And so that kind of, that led to the formation of the agency. And then my business partner is also an actor with the agency. And then when people get auditions for bigger parts, the other actors work with them, and we just are, you know, ship of fool. We're all in this together.
I can see the whole notion of William Morris beginning to realise that, yes, actually, Cynthia Martin will be the name of the 21st century. And just as people used to say in the 20th century, I well recall from the Spotlight casting directory on the UK side of the routine, if you weren't with William Morris, you weren't in the business, well, that was nonsense then. But I'm sure the same thing will be said with respect to Cynthia Martin. If you're not with Cynthia Martin, I don't know, your career could be on the skids. Neil Johnson, of course, will be joining us in a few weeks' time, another key director, producer, writer. But let's talk a little bit about the pilot season, because one of our other regular correspondents, Kelly Duncan Joyner, who worked with the Tom Chasen Associates agency for a time and has now sort of stepped aside into her own sort of agency field as well, you often used to say that the kind of key period for pilot season used to be, back in around about the sort of September, the sort of the fall period, September, October, that sort of time. It would seem these days you've actually got two, because obviously with mid-season breaks and inserts from that point of view, is it true that actually you're getting more than one pilot season per year?
You know, there's a little bit in the fall, but I would say the heaviest pilot season starts about mid-January and is still going, it's just starting to wind down. This is definitely the biggest pilot season of the year. But you do find a little bit in the fall, but definitely January, February, March is still the biggest push, and it's the craziest time.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Can't let you go without talking about Alien Dawn and Alien Armageddon, because clearly that's very much in the science fiction fantasy field, which again can open up a whole range of things from that perspective. Is that a genre that you particularly sort of are fond of? Is it something which you think, well, you know, it's a job. I do the business from that point of view, just as in the same way as I was in Power Rangers in Space, the TV series. That's classic, 1996.
You've done your homework, haven't you?
We just wanted to clarify, you are not the Cindy Martin who used to also work for Marvel Comics and actually draw the adventures of Star Wars and Luke Skywalker. That's a different Cindy Martin, because we did have one query. So
yeah, it is a different Cindy Martin,
okay.
Although I am often confused for her.
Well,
the sci-fi genre,
yeah,
is just so much fun, especially in this digital age, because there's so much you can do with special effects. And Artists Unlimited, we do a lot of work with director Neil Johnson, who directed and wrote Alien Dawn, Alien Armageddon, and he's won quite a few awards on his newest, Starship. And that's always going to be a niche with our agency. Of course, we do pilots, we do feature films, but the sci-fi is a lot of fun, and we do a lot of joint productions with Neil Johnson in that respect.
And it makes perfect
sense. Alien Dawn, actually, that entire film, all the major roles were actors with Artists Unlimited.
And that,
Rochelle DiMario, Mike Arbuscato, Alex Bell, Tiffany Adams, Tiffany Martin, and yours truly. So, yeah, that will always be a big part of Artists Unlimited.
Do you know, I can sense, I mean, you know, we had Orson Welles used to run the Mercury Theatre Company. I can see that Artists Unlimited, with your good self at the head of the ship, could be, you know, the 21st century equivalent to the Orson Welles Mercury Theatre Company. Have you considered doing radio plays as well?
No, but it's definitely in this digital age an area worth looking into, and that's something that Neil Johnson and I should talk about.
Well,
and you know what else we're doing over here, though? We're also venturing into action feature films. And right now, one of our actors, Philip Marshall Tyler, is starring opposite Bruce Willis and Sir Ben Kingsley in Wake. And they're calling this Bruce Willis's last action film.
No.
And
surely not. I mean,
that's what they're saying. I hope not,
yeah,
but that's
exactly
what they're saying. And then our Philip Marshall Tyler, he and Ben Kingsley are the villains in that project, and that's going to be another direction for the agency. We're going to be going more into the action feature film.
Yeah. And it is quite interesting, because obviously Ben Kingsley, British actor, for a long time you've got a notion, well, if you've got a received pronunciation British accent, you've obviously got to be the villain, because that makes perfect sense. You are the villain. Never mind.
Absolutely.
It's a different line, but yes, I think that one of the beauties, and obviously we're doing a radio interview at present in many ways, as well as podcast and so on and so forth, but I often find that one of the great things about radio in its format, as well as being the theatre of the mind, is of course you can actually listen to radio plays and radio sort of features as you're driving along, whereas if you actually had a DVD playing whilst you're driving a car, fatal, could be a disaster, you know, carnage on your hands, it's not going to work at all. So it's another way of actually consuming the goodness of the media in every sense.
And, you know, there's so much retro, at least here in the States, coming back. Record players, landlines, and, you know, I think radio would be another one to bring back because there's so much you can do. There's so much you can do with the production, but then also with the imagination. I think I love it. I think that's definitely an avenue worth looking into.
Well, you see, there we are, Cindy, and you can always sort of link up with us at the University of Lincoln as well for academic credibility as well. Outrageous. You mentioned clearly the fine soul that's Neil Johnson. In fact, it was via Neil that initially we got in contact with your good self, because it's a bit of a tenuous link coming up here, but one of our regular correspondents every Wednesday, when he's not actually sort of attending various other post-production meetings and such like, we have Phil Leonis, director of The Truth Is Out There, and recently The Lady Killers, that's up there, and he hosts a show with Dean Hagland, formerly of The X-Files, called Chilpack Hollywood and Chilpack Hollywood Hour from downtown Los Angeles. And, bear with me, it's coming out now, they had as one of their guests recently the fabulous Tori Higginson, of course, known for Stargate, Atlantis, etc. And I believe Tori was one of the fine team that Neil was working with in a new project that they're looking to get off the ground and all sorts of other bits and pieces. So I think that was the interesting connection, which just goes to show it's always worthwhile keeping those network channels open, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. Especially in this industry, it's all building bridges and networking and everyone bringing each other up. And absolutely, I couldn't agree more.
So, Cindy, I know we're doing this as a pre-record because of the excitement of the time machine and the pilot season and all of those other factors. But have you ever been over to the United Kingdom? Have you been to Britain as yet? Have you sort of been to Lincoln, London, or any of the other sort of key sites on the other side of the Atlantic?
Absolutely, I have. When I was in law school, I spent a summer studying at Cambridge University. And I actually have a second cousin. He's now deceased. He was a professor over at Oxford. And I visited him quite a few times. I actually did quite a bit of studying in Europe. I studied at Cambridge. I also studied in the Netherlands. And
As I said at the start, Cindy, this is why we defined you as a Renaissance woman. You know, clearly you've got that whole sort of package writ large on that basis. And obviously this is moving on to the next stage, which is we need to set up the campaign either with our colleagues at Sci-Fi London and Louis Savvy, of course, with a fine country film festival that's now, I think, approaching its 14th year as far as sci-fi movies and things are concerned. But we need the campaign to actually bring you back to the UK, Cindy. We need more Cindy Martin in person in the United Kingdom. That's what we'll be looking for.
Absolutely, and I'm on board. I love the UK. It's one of my favorite places. I love the UK. I love the history, the historic architecture, the people. It's a wonderful place and very talented. Very, very talented.
Well, we do our bit.
Kingsley.
I mean, obviously, Eddie Redmayne did quite well at the recent Academy Awards, so that was okay from that point of view. We've had a few other actors who've done a few bits and pieces. In fact, you mentioned Charlie Chaplin. He, of course, he was born here to start off with. So, you know, we've got the United Artists baggage.
Absolutely.
So it all works well.
Yeah, it's definitely an international field we're in these days. And yeah, I love the UK. And you know what? You were mentioning Neil Johnson.
Indeed.
You know, Neil Johnson was born in the UK.
Exactly.
He grew up in Australia, but he was born in the UK.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the
and now here he is in LA. And actually, he goes back there, I believe, Starship, but right before Starship, he produced and filmed a movie over there. I'm sorry, the name slips me at the moment. But well, yeah, he keeps his ties there too.
Well, literally seconds before we did this link, we had email correspondence, and we have confirmed that all being well, assuming the planets are aligned and everything else is sorted, Neil will be joining us live on the show for April 1st. That's Wednesday, April 1st, 2015, all being well. So in many ways, Cindy, you're doing what all top agents do. You're kind of being a pioneer, and then you can turn around and say, it's not that bad, Neil. It's okay. You know, they're not that sort of harsh in the whole solar system. We've got two final questions to put to you at present. I mean, we could go on with lots of stuff. I really want to sort of focus on in terms of just some of the work that you've done and continued work from that point of view. But time is as ever of the essence, and we need to ask you those two final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today, Cindy Martin?
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, this is good. It's kind of customer feedback, Cindy. That's what we're looking for here. So the next critical question is, can we look forward to hopefully featuring you again in the not-too-distant future and possibly when pilot season has wound down, etc.? And obviously, you can celebrate the joys of your artists and all sorts of other things. Will you return, Cindy?
I absolutely will return. It would be an honour and a privilege.
Thank you, Cindy Martin. There we are. In case you're wondering, why did he refer to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition in that particular interview? Well, it was a pre-record because Cindy was actually in Malibu, California. And at that particular time, Parsec was just beginning to sort of nurse its way through that because we didn't know, was Dave Milling going to be here? Was he not going to be here? But he's here! Dave Milling, welcome back to Parsec.
Morning.
Although, of course, when you're listening to this as a podcast, it might be anything but morning, but still.
Well, you know, you can be on your own temporal plane.
On the show today, we, as well as listening to Cindy Martin, which we just have, of course you can play it back again if you want to find out more about some of the fabulous work she's been involved with, including Alien Dawn and Alien Armageddon, we will be talking Thunderbirds Are Go, the TV series that Sharon Lark is the visual effects producer. Don't sniff like that, Dave.
No,
it's not
going
good habits in any way, shape or form.
But it was a dramatic sniff.
Okay. I won't give you a quiz question if you're not sort of well behaved. It's a quiz question which I'll be intrigued. It's pretty Telefantasy. Talking about that, Telefantasy in Society is one of the events that we'll be speaking about, together with the Wales Comic Con, which takes place on the 26th of April, the Film and Comic Con in Cardiff, and of course the Film and Comic Con in Newcastle. In case you're wondering, why were we not at the East Midlands Comic Con over the weekend? Just time just eluded us, but never mind. We'll be there in all sorts of weeks. Plus, we'll be talking about a wonderful book called Gemini Force One. I'll say that again. Gemini Force One, which, of course, was one of the Gerry Anderson theme things, which is identified by SFX magazine as Stingray plus Thunderbirds equals Gemini Force One. So let's chat about that. And a brief mention for Robot Overlords. All this plus, did I mention Sharon Lark? I did. But first, Dave Milling's question on Parsec is, can you identify this particular theme, Dave? Any thoughts?
Sounds like Captain Scarlet.
No. Same decade, 1960s.
J90?
No. Put together by Sidney Newman originally. No.
A Frandromeda. I have no idea.
No. No, it is actually the theme to Out of the Unknown.
Well, that was Out of the Unknown.
Classic
and it
series.
Totally is.
Now, made available thanks to our good colleagues at the British Film Institute on DVD and Blu-ray, a whole collection of classic science fiction stories with a female producer that we'll be talking about as the whole thing proceeds. Some of them, of course, missing, believed, wiped, but a good chunk of the four series of Out of the Unknown is now available, so I just thought I'd mention that. Okay, coming around, Sharon Lark will be joining us. Did I say that? Yes, Sharon Lark, visual effects producer of Thunderbirds, plus a whole heap of other things as well. She actually worked with Gerry Anderson in the Captain Scarlet animated series. She was visual effects producer for Die Another Day, for Casino Royale, for a whole heap of other things you may or may not have heard of. You may have heard of Fuzzbox. This was Dave's selection. Dave Milling, of course, co-host of Parsec and International Rescue. Were you shocked?
I'm amazed we've got this on the system. I really am.
Shane Rimmer, you are listening to Parsec.
Mayday, mayday. Please respond. This is a distress call. We need your help. Please respond. International Rescue, are you reading us?
excitement is palpable. I can almost sort of see the whole thing coming through. And yes, we've put out the Mayday call, we've put out the International Rescue call, and she has responded. And we are, of course, referring to that superlative visual effects producer extraordinaire. If we said Casino Royale, Mission Impossible, Notting Hill, a whole range of other factors, we can only be referring to the movie legend, the cinematic legend, producer extraordinaire. That would, of course, be the fabulous Sharon Lark. Good morning, Sharon, or indeed good evening, Sharon, because over in New Zealand it's now almost sort of 9 o'clock, I believe.
Absolutely, but still very, very warm. We're having a long summer.
Well, do you know, actually, in Lincoln, England, it's not that bad either, actually. It's quite mild, really. Spring has definitely sprung, but that's the confusion, you see. We live on this little spheroid hemisphere, or double hemisphere, our third rock from the sun, and we all connect together in our own magical way. So, Sharon, I mean, as I say, there are so many sort of aspects that we could actually sort of work towards, but let's look at, obviously, something which I know an awful lot of people were very excited about, which is specifically the upcoming Thunderbirds Argo series. Now, Jamie Anderson, I think, has acknowledged that it's going to be true to his father's work from that point of view. You've got, obviously, David Graham there. You do seem to have successfully managed to avoid all the pitfalls, dare I say, that Jonathan Frakes fell into when he attempted that movie a few years ago, which we don't like to talk about, really.
Absolutely. So we're not going to. We're really excited about the series because I think we've been given the chance to really pay homage whilst updating the series. We've been very careful about how we've approached it so that we can be true to the joy of the original series, updating it for the kids so they get to know what the series was about and just stay true to the point of the story, which was all about rescue. And that's where we're at. Our stories are as non-violent as possible because we're talking about what happens when people are in a rescue situation. How do these young men deal with these situations, rescue situations that come up? How do they work together? And it's been really, really exciting. Great storytelling and beautiful images.
Absolutely. We've got a few questions from fans of the series, which we're going to put to you in a few moments, if that's okay. But I need to actually just look at your resume, because quite literally, I think it's fair to say that Michael Wilson of Gubbity will acknowledge that without your good work on the Bond series, probably Daniel Craig's era, and indeed even some of Pierce Brosnan's, wouldn't necessarily have been a sensation. We've got Die Another Day, visual effects producer. We've got Casino Royale, miniature effects producer, visual effects producer, and of course the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassum. You seem to have been very connected with, dare I say, genre material and superb genre material as well.
Yes, I have to say I've been very, very lucky, and the joy of working on the Bond films is being able to bring the whole digital technology together with actually the practical, because even as I joined us, there's still so much miniature work, so much great special effects work that's enhanced by the visual effects side, but stays, again, true to the excitement and the adventure. And we're just helping tell that story in the best way possible, and just an enormous joy to work on. Barbara and Michael, a total joy to work with, and Daniel Craig, obviously, really good fun to work with.
I'm interested to see, obviously, the connection between Thunderbirds and Die Another Day, because Rosamund Pike has finally secured the role. I know people might say, well, Gone Girl, she was pretty good in that. She got an Academy Award nomination. But I know secretly she'd always wanted to step into Sylvia Anderson's shoes and take over the voice of Lady Penelope.
Absolutely. And she's done it so beautifully. It's a wonderful, wonderful role. We're just thrilled that she's been working with us. And obviously to have the original Parker back as her bodyguard come chauffeur.
Precisely.
Has been, you know, again, fabulous.
And I'm also delighted that we can actually mention two movies which I still feel that you need to reappraise them, because I've regularly said, look, these movies were not as negative as some of the critics painted them at the time. One, of course, is The Avengers, the movie version with Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman, which I thought, actually, if you look at a lot of the Diana Rigg and Tara King episodes, the Linda Thorson and Diana Rigg ones, it wasn't too far off the mark from that point of view in terms of a movie. Likewise, Lost in Space, I think that was quite nice in terms of the way, and obviously the visual effects production on both, and indeed the line production for Lost in Space, superb, because you were looking after it.
Well, that was very early on in my career, so thank you very much. I was part of a very big team, and we were all, you know, experiencing the new world of visual effects and just having a lot of fun exploring what we could do, you know, our limitations, but also what could be done really, really well with a fantastic team, great supervisors. That, you know, it was a big team in those days. There were a lot of people working on those shows to achieve the kind of work that we do in much smaller teams now.
And that, of course, is one of the interesting things, because clearly in the 60s, when you probably weren't even born, actually, Sharon, from the perspective of Thunderbirds and what Gerry Anderson and his team were doing in Slough, we saw recently with the Super Mario Nation Is Go movie and so on, the likes of Derek Meddings and so on, they were very key core team, and obviously went on in the case of Derek Meddings to actually earn extensive sort of experience and work for the Bond movies as well.
Absolutely, and I'm very happy and privileged to say that I was able to work with him before he finished with his career. And, you know, and great man, and wonderful to actually work and bring what we could, because we're just tools of the trade as well. So we're just another part of that team, and we're all working together. And to try and bring and enhance some of the beautiful miniatures work that he did, you know, again, was a real pleasure.
I often say to my students, actually, at the University of Lincolnshire, Sharon, that there are two people who are particularly pleased to have actually met when they were actually on the planet. Obviously, I include yourself as a third person now, Sharon, quite clearly. But the two in particular were Gene Roddenberry, creator of Star Trek, and Gerry Anderson. I think both of them understood that actually the way to inspire people, and this slots into obviously our Lincoln Inspired Festival and Inspired on Air, and indeed the Telefantasy and Society Conference, the way to inspire people is to actually sort of use the medium of science fiction, fantasy, use the mind to really open up a whole range of things. And they both did this extraordinarily well, I thought, obviously with the Star Trek franchise and with Gerry Anderson, certainly very much, I've said this before, a British Walt Disney.
Absolutely. I mean, I watched both of those growing up, and to actually grow up and then be able to work on them and really get and understand the stories they're trying to tell and how they're trying to teach us the lessons of life through fantasy and science fiction was just so clever and so beautifully executed. Great shows.
Indeed. Now, we have a number of questions, as mentioned, from a few of the... the voice of fandom is Ross Ironfield, who's a superlative soul who also looks after our Telefantasy and Society website. He's over at the University of Salford, where he looks after a whole range of things for the staff and students there. We'll just run through these in order. First of all, have we got any details about when the new Thunderbird series is due to premiere? I think we actually have the 15th of April scheduled here. Is that still go for the official UK launch of the series?
Ooh, do you know that? I cannot answer
that's
that.
That's okay. This is good.
I don't think it's going to be far off, but I can't answer it just yet.
Okay. An interesting one for a second one. As well as the United Kingdom, where obviously it's going to be greeted with tremendous joy and happiness, I guarantee that. Has the series also been sold internationally, and will there be any changes to international versions? For instance, will you be changing the voice artists for American audiences or other audiences and so on?
No, we're not changing any voices, and yes, it has been sold internationally.
Yay! It's international rescue, it had to be!
Absolutely, absolutely. There's been such tremendous response to it, because it's actually a very popular show all around the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to go up much longer later than the UK release. I think they'll be rolling it out all across the world, because pretty much everybody's bought into it.
Well, I know that our colleagues at SFX magazine very excited about the whole thing. Richard Edwards, of course, back on the show in a few weeks' time. So great news from that point of view. So good stuff there. Obviously, when we're in the world of SF and telefantasy and so on, merchandise is critical to the whole thing. I think Gerry Anderson, certainly the whole Century 21 aspect, he understood this and worked this thing through. Ross is particularly keen to praise the toy lineup from Vivid Imaginations, looking very exciting. Obviously, Tracy Island, action figures, vehicles, a large-scale Thunderbird too. He's also suggested, would there be a possibility of a Lego version coming through, a Lego version of Thunderbirds Argo? Any thoughts on that one?
Again, not actually allowed to comment on that one.
I could appreciate Sharon. I appreciate
it. Very, very exciting thought, for sure. And we did spend a lot of time working very closely with Vivid, actually, as we put the craft together, which are literally, you know, they are only 30% different from the originals. Yeah. So we've just slightly updated them, but what we've made sure to every extent possible is those toys do what they do on the screen. Because I remember there's nothing more disappointing as a child of buying a toy and it doesn't do what it said on the telly.
Exactly.
So we're very, very excited about that, and I've already started my collection.
You see, this is it. You've got Peter Jackson on the one hand with his kind of goodies, and you've got yourself on the other side. It's fantastic. It's just joyous in every sense of the word. Great news that the series has been renewed for a second series. We gather that's okay, even before the first ones even premiered. So Ross is keen to know, does this mean we can expect the series to continue for years to come, pretty much as Doctor Who has? Hopefully that'll be a resounding yes.
There are no guarantees of anything,
no.
But we truly believe that we've got a fantastic show on our hands. We've got great scripts coming in for second series. We're introducing characters that we hope will allow us to keep going, because we're going to introduce characters that allow the story to keep being told. So we're all hoping, yes, that will be a resounding yes from ITV.
I love the way in which, obviously, the sort of snippets have been going out on the web, because that's something, obviously, Jerry didn't really have that access to the internet and the World Wide Web that, obviously, you have with production from that point of view, a real chance of actually opening up sequences. We just take a short little break, just have a little snippet from, I suspect, it's the character called The Hood who's speaking now. He's not actually speaking, it's an instrumental version that we've actually got there, but we do have the Hood presumably as the main villain of the piece with respect to the sequence.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And yes. Of course, speaking about music, Barry Gray produced some iconic thing. I have to say, what I've heard of the orchestral material that's been released so far, it does seem that you got the right balance between something that kind of makes you feel positive about this whole thing. It's impressive, it's large, it's got that wow factor, Sharon.
Absolutely, and I can't, you know, speak more highly of our composers who've, you know, scored it, performed a lot, and they have really stayed true to the original themes. They've used a lot of brass, and they've created a very cinematic score, which in a children's show is fabulous, and does the show real justice.
Absolutely. A couple of interesting ones, which again, I appreciate Sharon, if you turn to say, I can't answer that, but Ross has heard a rumour that Sylvia Anderson is to guest star as Lady Penelope's auntie. Are there any sort of thoughts about, is that there, or is that a case of can't say anything about that, and I appreciate if it's a case of no, I can't say anything.
No, I can actually confirm that, yes, she is.
Whoa.
She's Lady Penelope's great aunt Sylvia, and it's so beautifully written. Very funny episode. She's been absolutely thrilled to be part of it, and we're just so pleased that she has been able to be. It's a very good episode.
So head of security looks as though she's an all-action, go-getting gal, much more than Tintin used to be.
Absolutely. Well, she's kind of an older version of Tintin.
Yep.
She's grown up, and she's grown up with the boys, and they are, you know, working together, and they are all playing to the strengths as they grow up and learn what their strengths are and who they're going to be. It's why each of them flies a different craft in a way, and she's actually found her own space and her own role. And it's wonderful to be able to give the girls, not just Lady Penelope, who's just glamour and fabulousness with a bit of a kick-ass behind that, but also a really strong, fun, bright female character that complements the boys and keeps them on their toes.
Absolutely, and not to be confused, of course, with Hergé's adventures, because obviously she doesn't have a dog called Snowy, and that would be very confusing, so we best not go there at all, really, for that one. But it did confuse me as a child. I thought, surely, on one hand, we've got Tintin, who's a Belgian reporter, and the other hand, you've got she's a girl in Thunderbirds. It's very confusing, anyway.
Yeah.
So the whole package of our issues. Sharon, it's been fantastic just sharing some thoughts with you. Because you're off, obviously, from New Zealand to Australia, so you'll be working through that. I mean, will you be back in the UK before too long? I mean, what's the sort of the official sort of line that you'll be taking in terms of Sharon Lark, visual effects coordinator and producer extraordinaire? Where will you be heading over the next few months?
Do you know what? I'm keeping that very open. I've got a wonderful opportunity to work on a co-production between New Zealand and Australia. I'm loving it over this side of the world, although I'm missing all my friends in the UK. So I think you might have to ask me that question in about a year's time.
Well, that's interesting.
I'm keeping my options open.
Always good. But as I say, as long, I mean, this is the joy of telecommunications. We haven't even had to use Thunderbird 5 to actually get this telephonic link established. So that's always good, you know? And I could never quite go along with Jerry's line that the reason he actually sort of put John Tracy actually up in Thunderbird 5 was as a character, he didn't really like him very much. You know, come on now, it wasn't that bad. I have to say, I think Thunderbird 4 and Gordon Tracy was always my favourite. That or Virgil Tracy and Thunderbird 2. People will have their own favourites, inevitably. 26 episodes of Thunderbirds Are Go.
Absolutely.
About to launch through. Truly fantastic stuff from that point of view. We're coming around to two final questions today. Sharon Lark, first and foremost, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the production today? Has it been okay for yourself?
It's been great, and thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me.
Well,
it's really good to be able to talk about the Thunderbirds.
Well, we thought it was. It's not just our colleagues, Tara Bennett et al., who can actually do superlative showrunners aspects, etc. We celebrate the greatness because, actually, you know, in terms of the imagining engineers, you guys are just so important because I just get a good feeling about this, which I think probably our return. I know we said we weren't going to talk about our return. And I do like Jonathan Frakes. So I think it's fine. But when that movie came out, when even Jerry hadn't been consulted at the time, I just thought they'd lost the plot. It was Spy Kids meet something else, and I think there was always a concern that, as you rightly said at the start, you've been true to the reimagining. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. I mean, any thoughts about...
Exactly. The limitations of the puppetry were probably the thing that frustrated Jerry the most,
yep,
because he loved to direct action.
Sure.
And in a way, I think we've even taken that a step further in that we can direct the action because with CG characters and vehicles, we're able to give them that extra bit of life, but we're sitting them in a miniature world, in a real world that you can feel. You can feel that it's real. It has texture. Everything feels right about it. It's absolutely been such a joy to be able to technically bring together both live action miniature work and CG work and seamlessly blend them, really erring on the side of that beautiful miniature Gerry Anderson world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we really hope that people understand and respond to the unique beauty of it.
Well, I know Jamie Anderson is joining us on the show in a couple of weeks' time. He's got his own projects he's working through, but I'm sure Jamie will. I mean, he's a key fan of Terrorhawks, actually, so that's his sort of line that he's there. I think he's slightly younger in terms of the... or slightly less chronologically gifted, but I'm sure he'd be delighted with the whole sort of system. We haven't even had a chance to speak about Banking Mr. Toad, or Banking on Mr. Toad. That's nothing to do with Thunderbirds, but another little project that's in development. The final question at this particular stage, Sharon, is can we look forward to hopefully featuring you again in the not-too-distant future, no matter where in the world you happen to be, and time zones all being well interconnected and working?
Well, I think the way the old telecommunications work, I don't see a problem with that. It would be a pleasure to join you again.
Sharon, a genuine delight. Many thanks indeed. Take care, and let's. It's been FAB.
Thank you very much as well.
Excellent. Just quoting from Alistair Reynolds, a wonderful sci-fi author whose latest book, Poseidon's Wake, is released in Sci-Fi Now magazine this month. Gerry Anderson saw the future, the importance of creating a future you can believe in. Now, couple of things in terms of our housekeeping, Dave. We must not forget. We saw the sad passing of two legends of fantasy and science fiction. Of course, Leonard Nimoy and Sir Terry Pratchett both moved into another dimension. So we acknowledge their fantastic contributions to fandom and indeed, obviously, to the worlds of fantasy and science fiction and so on. And I know that heaven will be a better place for them. So there we are. Discworld.
Exactly.
Various other things.
I did my own sort of... Private Eye, so you know when they when someone famous dies, they do this. So farewell,
mm-hmm,
then.
All right.
So farewell, then, Mr. Spock. He had pointed ears, unlike the Doc.
Excellent. We'd also like to say,
I haven't done a Me and My Spoon yet.
Right. Lord knows what will come out with respect to Terry Pratchett, but still. We'd like to send belated birthday wishes, although this is being recorded on the same day, St. Patrick's Day, sure enough. So belated birthday wishes to Paul Terry. Happy birthday, Paul Terry. Well done for making it this far.
And, 37 years today.
Well, there you are, you see. You know that because you went to college with him and featured him in Parsec before, so you see, we give him a name check as well.
I think we actually got hopelessly drunk once for one of his his 21st birthday.
Stop reminiscing, Dave.
That was too much. Quite a good St. Patrick's Day.
I'll play the Thunderbirds theme. It'll sort of come through in the background there, which is very apt, as we actually mentioned that Sherlock's, the official Sherlock convention, will be happening between the 24th and 26th of April at the Exile in London, where Stephen Moffat and Sue Virtue will be attending together with Mark Gatiss and production designer Arwell Johnson, I think, who'll be taking part in that particular event. Now, astoundingly, a big shock, because you have actually stunned me, Dave, today, insofar as you came into the studio and said, I have seen Jupiter Rising.
Jupiter Ascending.
Is it Jupiter Ascending? Are you sure
yes,
it's not
it
Jupiter
is.
Rising?
I'm sure it's
okay.
Jupiter Ascending.
Well, allowing for that, you have actually seen it. And it's polarised people left, right and centre. What has your thoughts been on the movie? Did you enjoy it?
Well, yeah, for those who haven't seen it, it starts quite violently. It's basically around Mila Kunis, who lives in a Russian sort of immigrant house with her family, and huge amount of family with respect to a bunch of cleaners. And they all have to go earn the keep, all this, that and the other, to... satisfy the head of the household. So the alarm goes off at 4 o'clock every morning, and it's the same sort of repeated routine every day, where they have to clean toilets and general stuff involved with cleaning. And then something completely crazy happens, and then come running in the sky with a pair of gravity boots is a sort of canine superhero wolverine god.
It's Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum, Adonis, from the sky, who then takes it to Sean Bean, who likes keeping bees. And from that point onwards, it's got your man in from the chap that just won the Oscar, whose name escapes
me. Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah, who plays
doing a very bizarre accented,
stilted, appallingly bad villain ever.
Was it Stephen Hawking?
Do you know what? I think you'd. I think Stephen Hawking would have been a better villain, to be fair. But it's the most... Quite clearly, the Academy Awards people did not see that before they decided to give him the Oscar.
Oh, please. You got Sean Bean in there as well.
But Sean Bean was fantastic, and Channing Tatum was fantastic. And there's a great line with respect to Mila Kunis when you know, he's saying, oh, you know, you're royalty now, et cetera, et cetera. Royalty does strange things to me, and I end up killing them. And she just basically goes... so he's some sort of dog, and so she says, oh, I like dogs, I love dogs, in fact. And
not the best delivery, it has to
not
be
the
said,
best
though.
Not the best of lines.
In the words of Poppy J. Palmer, reviewer for Sci-Fi Now, the amusing dialogue, interesting three-dimensional characters, and just how darn spacey and fun it all is makes Jupiter Ascending one to watch and enjoy, but ultimately forget you've seen something better.
No, I totally disagree with that. For 2 hours, okay, it wasn't like something convoluted like The Matrix. It wasn't something that requires ultimate attention. It was 2 hours of pure bonkers, absolute rip-roaring fun. There was special effects to eat your heart out. The story was quite clear. Basically, Mila Kunis was reborn in the image of three super gods, superpowers, mother. And it was all them trying to basically get her allegiance because they're all scared of her. And there in it, you have a story. And there's a wonderful guest appearance from Terry Gilliam, who appeared in a total Python-esque sort of plot about registering her status as a princess. And it was really, 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 really funny. And the key message to get from Jupiter Ascending, the key message that I took from it as well, is that no matter how important you may be in the universe, no matter if you may be the godliest person in the world, it's never beneath you to clean a toilet.
Profound.
Which in itself is a message that many, many women will be telling their husbands.
International rescue. Soon you will be in my hands. Virgil Tracy and the powerful Thunderbird 2. You may be calm under pressure, but I have ways to make you crack.
Devious and strangely frightening at the same time. Still to come, a general review of Gemini Force 1. Well, I say review, kind of preview, really. All this and more on Parsec. Good heavens, Dave, only 8 minutes to go. First of the Gemini Force One series, written, of course, by M.G. Harris, focuses mainly on youngster Ben Carrington. Born of wealthy, adventurous parents, he has never had to worry about money or his future until his father tragically dies in a freak climbing accident, leaving a beautiful widow and bewildered son at the mercy of the even more wealthy and slightly tetchy Jason Truby. Truby persuades the grief-stricken pair to join his elite but super top-secret rescue team, and before you can say Spectrum is green, they are off saving lives. This is, of course, if Ben can prove himself first. True homage to Jeff Tracy et al. The Gemini Force One team live on a base hidden by a Caribbean reef, wear matching outfits and fly a bunch of ludicrously complicated aircraft. One is even a futuristic, pimped-up version of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Well, that sold it to me. Claire Nichols writing in Sci-Fi Now about Gerry Anderson's Gemini Force One, Black Horizon, written by M.G. Harris, and out now. So there we are. It's a book which is well worth accessing, I feel. In fact, we might peruse that for the next edition of Parsec. How can people get in touch with us at Parsec? Dave Milling?
Well, I need to be on air first. They can email us, studio@sounonline.co.uk, with the subject matter for Parsec, or they can tweet us at Parsec_SIG, Sierra India Golf.
There you have it. Okay, time to press this button here.
Hello, this is Peter Davison. I was the Fifth Doctor, and you listen to Parsec on Siren FM.
And that's the end of the March Parsec. Going into April in many ways. We'll be back in April. Thanks certainly to Sharon Lark, yay, Thunderbirds, and of course Cindy Martin, and yourself, Dave Milling, and everybody else who's contributed to the Parsec magic. Stay with us. More goodies coming up. Don't forget Telefantasy and Society. You can register online now by simply going to the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/telefantasyandsociety, and clicking on the link for the Telefantasy and Society Symposium. We will have Jamie Anderson, Graham Harper, filmmaker extraordinaires. Extraordinaire? Plural, yes, indeed. Filmmaker extraordinaire. And indeed, founder of a whole heap of other fantastic scenarios will be there as well. Sam Stone will be there. We'll be having David Howe there. We'll be having lunch there. We're having Richard Hand there. It'll be a wonder. Shane Rimmer will probably be there. If you are there at all, if you want any credibility whatsoever, Telefantasy and Society, the symposium, May the 6th is when it's actually taking place. Darren Scales is the filmmaker, of course, who might well be sort of previewing one of his latest classic stuff. Okay, that's it, Dave. We have wrapped up now. We're wrapping up with Casey Musgraves. Right. Would you like to say, over and out, FABSIG, Thunderbirds are go?
TTFN.